Welcome to the Publishing Profits Podcast, where our mission is to help you turn your message and stories into millions. And now, here's your host, Tom Corson Knowles.
Hey, Evan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's so great to have you here. So if you're listening right now and you haven't met Evan yet, Evan Marshall is a literary agent at the Evan Marshall Agency. He's also a multi-published novelist and nonfiction author, and he's the creator of the Marshall Plan novel writing software. So Evan, tell us a little bit more about your background and how you got started in the publishing business.
I started as a book editor in New York. I worked for a number of publishers. I started in Boston. I'm a Massachusetts boy, so I worked for Houghton Mifflin in Boston, and then I moved to New York City and I worked for Signet Books and a small company called Everest House, which sadly is no longer in business. And then I worked for a very famous old company called Dodd Mead, most famous for publishing Agatha Christie, but sadly no longer in business. And then I became an agent, and I started out working for an agent, a very well-known agent named Sterling Lord, a terrific gentleman. I learned a lot and went out on my own in 1987, 30 years ago. So we're celebrating 30 years this year.
That's great. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I know we just signed a book deal with you at TCK Publishing, so we're really excited to work with you on that.
Thank you. We're thrilled. The author is thrilled too.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned just now like a couple of companies that you've worked with before, publishers, have gone out of business, right? And I know you've seen a lot.
I guess I'm bad luck.
Well, no, I don't think it's anything about you, but I mean, you've been in the industry for a long time, right? I mean, and the industry has changed so much, especially in the past, 10, 15 years. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, what's happened in the industry? What's changed the industry since you've been in it that has really made a big impact on authors' careers and potential?
Well, first of all, when I started, there used to be many more publishers. There were many small independent publishers that were considered major publishers in New York City. And over time, they just engulfed and devoured each other so that now we basically have the big five, as we say. Let's see, it's Macmillan, which is Holzbrinck, Penguin Random House, HarperCollins, Hachette, Simon & Schuster. Is that five?
Yeah, that's five.
Okay. At any rate, most of the publishers that existed when I started are either imprints of one of these five larger publishers, or they don't exist anymore. So that's a big change since I started. So as far as agents are concerned, we have fewer places to sell books. Very often, we do submit projects to multiple imprints within a large publisher, but we are obliged to tell the editors when we do that because they're not allowed to bid against themselves. So it's really not the same as the old days when we could submit to truly separate publishers. Another way things have changed is that it's sadly no longer what we would call a gentleman's business. There's no more midlist. In my day, we at Signet, we actually had a series of books every month that we just called the midlist. We called it the midlist or Signet fiction. And those were books that were bigger than category, but not top of the list books, as we would say. Today, there's no room for books like that. A book has to be solid genre category, or it has to be able to go out on its own in a big way. So, for example, thrillers. We used to have midlist thrillers. We had modest hopes for them, sales projections. If they met those projections, great. Today, a thriller would really need to go out at the top of the list and sell a lot of copies, or else that author would probably be canceled. So it's a more hard-nosed business. Another example of that is that bookstores very rarely want to do signings anymore unless you are a brand name. There used to be signings practically every week in people's local Barnes & Nobles, Walden Books, all the stores that used to exist. Now, many Barnes & Noble stores just say it's not worth our while. We'll have you if you're, Oprah Winfrey or a great chef that's popular this week on TV. But otherwise, we can't use you. So it's very hard-nosed. It's harder to sell. A wonderful change in that regard is the advent of publishers like yours. You have made it possible for perfectly terrific projects that simply don't fit in at the large publishers to find a home and to reach readers. Many publishers have to play it safe. They're mostly looking for reasons to say no. They have to play it safe. They have to buy something that they know will work. Otherwise, their jobs are on the line. So projects I would once have been able to sell quite easily, I'm not able to sell. And many agents will tell you the same thing. So now we have publishers like yours who are able to chase the long tail, as we say, find the niche readers and get these authors started. And ironically, many times the big five swoop in and try to pick up these authors who have become successful at publishing houses like yours. Sometimes the answer is no, we're doing perfectly well without you. How else has it changed?
Well, I want to talk a little bit more about that because, you know, you mentioned like these big publishers and these editors, they're very risk averse, right? They don't want to make a mistake. So what is it that they're afraid of? They're just afraid of acquiring a book and then not meeting their sales projections and then their boss is going to fire them. Like what is that mindset?
You just said it. Exactly. They're afraid it will tank and they will lose their jobs. P&Ls are done on editors. What did you acquire? How did it sell? How did these projects sell? How much money did we make off what you acquired? How does what we made on what you acquired compare with what we paid you in salary? So that is what they're afraid of. They have their marching orders, get the big safe books. I'm not trying to say nothing new is ever tried, but it's done very carefully. And usually it's not really new. For example, 50 Shades of Grey is an unexpected success several years ago. And suddenly everybody wants to publish the, you know, S&M romance, as we call it. It's new, but it's safe and new. It's much easier to fill one of those limited slots with something you know will sell. It's just business.
Gotcha. And so from the author's perspective then, what is your advice to a writer who wants to get a great book deal? Should they try to figure out ahead of time before they even start writing, you know, what these big publishers want and kind of write to that market? Or what is your advice?
That is one excellent approach. You work backwards. You look at what the editors are looking for. You go to places like Publishers Marketplace, the deals page of Publishers Weekly. You read book reviews. You read the New York Times book review. You go to writing conferences where publisher staff appear and tell what they're looking for. And if you think you would enjoy writing something in one of those areas, you give them exactly what they want. You read their guidelines. You look carefully at what they're already publishing so that you don't give them something close to what they already have. And you literally give them what they want. If, on the other hand, you're a writer with an idea that's different and doesn't fit in, there's nothing wrong with the new indie publishing. Vanity publishing, as self-publishing used to be called, was an embarrassment to most people. It meant that your work wasn't any good and you had to pay $5,000 or $10,000 to fill your garage with books that usually just got moldy and didn't sell and you gave them to your relatives. It's all different now. You can have a book for sale as an ebook, as a print on demand, within a matter of weeks. So especially if the kind of book you're writing is more of a niche genre or subgenre, it makes perfect sense. Why waste any more time banging your head against the wall? Get it out there. And if it does well, you may be approached the way I mentioned recently, or you may just do great and not need to be approached.
Gotcha. And so I know that there's been a lot of chatter in the author community online about, you know, self-publishing and traditional publishing and saying, you know, if you self-publish a book or have an indie publisher or, you know, do vanity publishing, you're never going to get an agent. You're never going to get a book deal. Is that true?
That's totally untrue. I have many authors who have self-published whom I've later placed with major publishers. I'm doing a deal like that right now. I have had self-published books that I have sold to the majors that they republished, new cover, new title sometimes. That's not true because that's a way for you to prove you can get the sales, even if no big publishers picked you up yet.
Gotcha. But what if you like self-publish a book and you don't sell many copies? Does that hurt your chances of, let's say, pitching that same book to a literary agent?
Yes. On the whole, unless a self-published book has sold phenomenally well, agents are not going to be interested in taking it on to try to place it. The publishers feel it's already had its life.
That's interesting. So what would you consider like phenomenal sales for a self-published book?
Oh, several hundred thousand copies.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And continuing that way.
Right. And at that point, I mean, I feel like most self-published authors wouldn't really want it. Just like Hugh Howey, I mean, has turned down deals because, you know, he's selling that kind of volume and it's just not really worth it. Like he makes more money self-publishing.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a very common attitude right now. What do we need you for? Or I approached you before with this very book and now you're knocking on my door. No, thank you. I've done this on my own. There are examples of indie published authors early on who got big million-dollar deals with the majors, and then with their new projects for these major publishers didn't sell as well as they were selling on their own, and many of them have gone back to straight indie publishing. But to answer your question, a book that has been self-published in most cases will not be of interest to agents and editors. It's best to go out with a fresh project.
Gotcha. Okay. So then from your perspective, you know, as an agent, you know, let's imagine your ideal client, right? Now, you know, that you get this manuscript and you're just like, I am so excited to work with this person. What would that process look like? Like, what is, you know, take us through from like the very first interaction with an author to, you know, sign them on as a client and then getting them a book deal. Like, what does that whole process look like for you for an ideal client?
Sure. It would begin with a query. It comes by email. And it would be a very professional brief. It's really a business letter. It would, right off the bat, it would tell me if anyone I know referred that person to me, or if this person met an editor who knows me or knows another of my clients. And then it would launch into a description of the book they're trying to sell. What's the genre? What's the word length? Would you compare it to anything that's out now or has been out recently, either one or several projects? Then a brief description of the plot. And I mean brief. The whole query really shouldn't be more than a page. And then at the end, a description of any credits the writer might have, things the person has published, and then any writing credentials such as organizations belong to, prizes won, that kind of thing. If I like what I see and it looks promising, I'll ask to see the manuscript. The author will send the manuscript. I will read it, or I will have one of my trusted readers read it. If I get a recommendation from my reader, then I read it. If I like it and think I can sell it, I give the author a call and we talk about expectations, career expectations. I'll tell the person exactly what I think I can do. No promises. But this is what I think. These are the publishers I think I might be able to sell you to. What are your plans? How many books do you think you could write in a year? Do you want to keep writing this kind of book? I want to get a feeling of the person because most of my authors have been with me many, many years. And you mentioned once that you like writers who are in it for the long run and want to make a career of it. That's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in helping people reach their goals. So I've had some authors working with me for 30 years, some were with me before I started my own agency. So more than 30 years. And we've gone from unpublished to bestseller. Not every time, I won't lie, but very often it's amazing the journey. So the relationship is really, it's manager. It's sometimes I feel like it's therapist. We're working together to build a career and we're a team.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. That's great. And so you mentioned readers in that process. So who are your readers and where do they come from?
Readers are usually former editors with major publishing houses. They're often people I used to sell books to when they were editors. They either left for family reasons or lost their jobs or they're between jobs. And those are the people I really want as readers because they know exactly what I'm looking for. In many cases, they have bought books from me.
Okay, gotcha. And so they're not paid employees. They're kind of professionals that you know, and you know they have great skills, obviously, as editors, and so you really trust their opinion.
Exactly. It's not easy to find good readers who bring the right criteria when they read. They know exactly what I'm looking for. They know when to stop reading. We speak the same language, and it's valuable to have people like that. I have two or three, but things change, so I'm always looking.
Gotcha. And so when you read the manuscript yourself, walk us through that process. So when you first open up that file, what do you look at? What do you read? How do you read? And how much of it do you read?
Sometimes I read very little because I can tell right off the bat that there are technical errors in the fiction writing. For example, no knowledge of writing in viewpoint, point of view. They will be in an omniscient voice and bopping from head to head, or they'll be in what I call cinematic voice, where we're pulling back and we see a city from a distance and we swoop in and the sun is setting and traffic is heavy and we're not in anyone's point of view. It feels like a movie. And I think that's exactly what often happens. A writer writes the way he or she sees a movie in his or her head. I look for grammatical errors. I'm really looking for smooth, professional fiction writing. If I see errors, I know this person doesn't know what he or she is doing, and I won't spend any more time on it. However, when I see the person gets it, it's very exciting, and I keep reading because then I really want to know what has he or she done with this story. So it's a funnel, and it comes down. Very few make it to the bottom of the funnel because it's funny how the right way to write fiction is there in front of us in bookstores, on our own shelves, and yet there's a disconnect between what we read and enjoy and what we do when we try to do it ourselves. I think some writers deep down just want to do it the way they want to do it. I need writers who want to do it the way publishers want and readers want, and those people I can sell.
Gotcha. And so how many pages does it normally take for you to recognize, okay, this is not a good fit at all, or, oh, hey, I'm interested, I'm going to keep reading?
One page. I can tell on the first page. I can also, well, obviously, if a query is full of errors or full of hype, I won't ask to see the manuscript. Sometimes a query is very good and promising, but the manuscript comes in and doesn't live up to the query. But I can pretty much tell, usually on page one, if the writing is smooth and professional, then I'll read a chapter. I just keep reading. The goal is to keep reading to the end because there's no problem. It's got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's interesting. So it seems like, you know, from the author's perspective, there's really two key things they need to do well, right, in order to get an agent to take them on, right? So number one, you write a great query letter that gets you to ask for the manuscript, right? And then step two is, you know, have a great manuscript that gets the agent to read the whole thing, right?
Exactly. And there are, just as I said, there are examples of good fiction writing all around us. There are thousands of examples of good query letters all around us. And yet I get the zaniest things. You know, I know there's a correct way to write a query letter, but I don't want to do that. Let me just tell you, what if you married 50 Shades of Grey with Gone with the Wind, or crazy, crazy letters. And things like that signal to me that this person right off the bat has not made any effort to be professional within the rules of this particular business. You can just tell. So, but however, if a writer has mastered the art of the query letter, you're through the first door. And then, of course, you have to have the excellent fiction material to back it up, and you're there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So once you take on a client, what does that process look like? Like, what is the first thing that you do with a brand new client after you've signed a contract with them?
The first thing I will do is we will go over all the material to make sure it's as strong as it can be. If it's a complete manuscript, I will often write back with some notes, some suggestions, maybe some revisions that would make it stronger. That usually is the case. Very rarely does anything come through perfect. I will also get an idea of future planned projects, so that I, when I'm speaking with editors, I can say, I have a book I'm very excited about. I'd love to show it to you, but this is what this person plans to do. So if it's a series, I can talk about future books planned in the series. If it's a writer who does standalone novels, I can talk about, you know, what the person has in mind. Then once I have everything I need and a good solid bio of this author, I'm equipped to start submitting. So I submit right away. I usually submit multiply. I keep my authors informed of what I'm doing. I like to show them the correspondence I get from editors about their work. I think they can learn from it. Some are a little squeamish and ask me not to show them these letters, these emails. That's fine. Most want to see it. It can take a while to sell. Sometimes takes a month or two, sometimes a year. But if I believe in a project, I won't stop until I've run out of ideas. But that's pretty much how it goes. And during that process, I will urge the writer to start something new. Don't sit back and wait for me to tell you I've sold you in 5 months, because you may have spent 6 years writing this first book, but most publishers would like a book at least once a year. So you're not going to have 6 years to write that second book. You only have unlimited time on the first one. That's important. I've had authors say to me, oh no, I couldn't possibly write a novel every year. I'm going to need at least 2-3 years. And I'll tell them, honestly, that's not going to work. We can't gain any traction. Publishers won't be interested in you if that's how much time you need. It is a business. The books have to be good and they have to be fast. My most successful people write top quality fiction and produce it regularly.
That's really interesting. So when you're pitching the editors, they always want to know, how often is this author going to continue to write books in this genre? Because they want to know, if this book does well, when can we expect the next one? Because they want that follow-on business.
Absolutely. With genre fiction, I often start out with a multi-book contract. So we set delivery dates. So there's discussion ahead of time. You know, we love this book, we'd like to take it, but we want to publish this person in 2019, 2020, and 2021. Can she deliver on these dates? And with any luck, I'm able to say, yes, I've already spoken to her about that. That's not a problem. Most writers are not full-time writers. They do it part-time, you know, evenings, weekends, but they know they've got to produce regularly and they have to be on time.
That's interesting. So what happens when a writer doesn't make the deadline?
It's if the writer hasn't given any warning, a good warning, at least a month, writers know pretty early that they're not going to be on time. If you give your agent warning and the agent can reset your delivery date, and then you deliver at that date, you're not late. It's when the editor is expecting a book to fill a slot and nothing is said, I can't say anything because I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, the book will be delivered on time. The machine has started. The cover is in the works. The pre-sales conference has happened. Sales collateral is being written and there's no book. It can be disastrous. I've had books never delivered with covers already made. I've received printed covers for books that were never delivered. So obviously that's a bad mark against that author. That author will not do business with that publisher ever again. It's really just communicating. We're all human. Things come up. We get sick. Things happen in our families. We all understand. You just have to give a fair warning that you're going to be late. Obviously, this is one of my pet peeves.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine, especially, you know, if the publisher's invested all that money and time and getting all that work done, and then the author doesn't deliver, doesn't even communicate about that. I can imagine how they wouldn't want to do business with that author again, for sure.
Sometimes the author sells very well, so we're in a bind. We don't want to lose this author. She's selling or he's selling extremely well. We just wish she would communicate better to let us know what's happening, because with a big author, the accounts, you know, the sales accounts are ready, the chains are ready. A lot of plans are being made around these books. The author is part of a much bigger plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned before, you know, the importance of, you know, writing the next book, even after, like, even when you get the agent and you start, you know, submitting the first book to publishers, you want to be starting to write your next book right away. So, and another thing that I found about the benefit of that is that it helps the author focus more on what's really important than on the day-to-day, right? So you're writing that next book and you're getting that ready to complete, as opposed to, you know, the interim results, you know, whether or not they sold to a publisher or whether or not the book is selling really well, the first book and so forth. So I found that it helps people, you know, not get that analysis paralysis of, oh my God, you know, focusing on the sales results.
And everything. That's so true. They're obsessed with the Amazon ranking. You know, look at this link. I'm number one or whatever. And, you know, genre, subgenre, subgenre, subgenre. You know, nine places out, I'm number one. That's great, and it is wonderful, but keep your eye on the prize. The other thing authors do that's a big mistake is look at what other authors are doing or getting. We're all on our own track. There's a lot of public information now about book sales and how things have done. You don't want to be looking, because that risks comparing yourself with other people. I get authors calling me and saying, I had a frank chat with so-and-so at such-and-such writers conference, and she said her first advance was this many dollars, and I only got this many dollars. Or I heard so-and-so got a three-book tour for her last book, and I sold my first book exactly when she did, and I'm not getting anything like that. It's a big mistake. We all write different things. We're with different publishers. No one author gets everything all the time. It's something I have to explain a lot.
Right. So really having the right expectations and then focusing on what's actually important, which is like your activity versus the results in the meantime. Because like you said, it's a journey. So if you look at the results in year one or year two, it doesn't mean it's going to be those results forever. You know, and if you keep focusing on your day-to-day on writing and improving your craft, you're going to be ahead of where you are the next year, right?
Exactly. You're only competing with yourself. That's the healthiest way to look at it. Otherwise, you're just going to become bitter. And many give up. They see other things people are getting. Who's to say why someone got such and such a deal? Different publisher, different editor. There's no way of knowing why. Look at what you're doing. Do your best.
Absolutely. That's great advice. So Evan, you shared just some great information with us today. I really appreciate it. And where can folks find out more about you and the work that you're doing?
They can go to my agency website, which is evanmarshallagency.com. They can learn about my software for writers at themarshallplan.net.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Evan. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure, Tom.
Hey there. I hope you loved the show today. I'm on a mission to help writers, authors, and entrepreneurs like you turn your passion into a profitable career, and I need your help. So I want to ask you a quick favor. Please share the show with your friends on social media, with your local writers group, or even on your website. You can also subscribe and leave a review for the show on iTunes. I really appreciate your support. Now, I also wanted to let you know that I have an amazing new free training course. It's called How to Become a Full-Time Author. And in that course, I walk you through exactly what it takes to earn a full-time income as an author. So you can check out the entire course for free at tckpublishing.com/FTA. That's tckpublishing.com/FTA, which stands for full-time author. This has been Tom Corson-Knowles. I'm wishing you an incredible day. Take care.